Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. It's the Monday, March 22nd, 2021 edition of the program. It is the NCAA tournament and NIT action is over for the area schools edition of the program. Tough weekend if you're a Mizzou, Illinois, or SLU Hoops fan. We're going to talk plenty of basketball throughout the week. We will talk about what happened and what happens moving forward. We'll keep talking about the NCAA tournament, but bummer of a weekend. Bummer of a last month or so for SLU after they had such an incredible start. Mizzou and Illinois failed to advance from the first weekend as well. Mizzou, of course, falling on Saturday to Oklahoma. Illinois dropping a game yesterday to Loyola and to Porter Moser. So lots of basketball talk coming up. But do want to talk some baseball today as we just continue to trudge along. I guess sometimes no news is good news in terms of issues or complications at spring training. And Mike Petriello, our guy from MLB.com, he's going to be with me to talk baseball and talk Cardinals and talk start of the season in just a moment. Don't forget, head over to wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe to Scoops with Danny Mac. Leave me a review, send me a screenshot on Twitter, and we'll hook you up. Little prize pack. Tweet me at CHRABE. Follow us on Twitter at Scoops with Danny Mac, and of course, visit ScoopsWithDannyMac.com every day for all the latest. All right, let's welcome in Mike Petriello from MLB.com. That's where you can read him. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike_Petriello. What's going on, man?
I was trying to think about what I was doing on March 22nd a year ago, but it definitely wasn't watching the NCAA tournament and spring training baseball on a Monday afternoon. What a difference a year makes. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing okay. I'm trying to remember what I was doing a year ago. And it was it was foolishly thinking, oh, this won't last too long. Probably
4 weeks. We're all going to be good.
Yeah, no, we're great. Well, I can't complain. You know, my wife got her first shot yesterday. I'm waiting my turn and things are good.
Yeah. You know, it's great to watch. I think the way that the wheels have kind of turned, and I was thinking about this the other day, because it seems like for the most part, spring training has just kind of been spring training-y. And what I mean by that is, it's kind of the normal spring training storylines that, you know, go round and round. And at some point, you know, you're kind of waiting for the spring training games to be over and the games to start. And I think that the fact that I at least feel like we're in that kind of normal, not mundane, but just kind of the normal day-to-day rhythm is a pretty remarkable thing right now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that is a huge credit, I think, to the players and to, you know, the staff and management who've been keeping everybody safe. Like, there's that PR email that comes out once a week updating everybody on what the COVID test numbers have been. And I don't have it in front of me, but last week's was like one positive test in many, many thousands of tests. You know, like, you're really hearing that guys are doing the hard work. And it's not easy, man, I'm sure, to be down there for weeks at a time and not being able to have this experiences, not sharing the clubhouse with it, to everyone down there in Arizona and Florida who are keeping this, as you said, somewhat normal and kind of fun.
You know, I wonder if, you know, this spring, and if we get into the season and if things go smoothly, maybe this is the optimist in me, Mike, but I wonder if any of that and any of the work that is being done behind the scenes could lead to perhaps a smoothing over, or perhaps some repair of whatever needs the immediate repairing in the relationship between the Players Association and Major League Baseball, because kind of looming over everything, like, and I don't mean to be the, you know, glass half empty or glass almost completely empty as the season goes on, but almost looming over everything is, yeah, but what's going to happen at the end of this year and with the CBA, especially if lines are potentially even more defined over the course of this season?
I really appreciate your optimism on that. it's going to loom over the season, and it is, to be totally honest, going to deeply suck. You know, like, I think we all know that this is not going to be a quick and easy resolution. I think that the part that people maybe forget is that the agreement ends on December 1st, right? So it's not in the middle of the season. It's not in the middle of the playoffs. My guess is we probably go past that date without an agreement, right? And it's going to make for a really weird and unsettling winter. But that doesn't necessarily mean an agreement can't happen in, you know, December, January, February, whatever. It doesn't mean that next season won't start on time. But yeah, you're right. I mean, hopefully this season will go off smoothly and, you know, a full 162 with some amount of fans in the seats and a full playoffs will maybe reinforce some of the teams who struggled last year, understandably, with no fans. And, you know, we'll all realize the benefit of working together. But you're right. That's going to be an ongoing story for the next 6 months.
Visiting with Mike Petriello, MLB.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike_Petriello. How do you, Mike, as you look at data, and you had a great piece on some potential breakout hitters this year, I'm really interested to see how usage last year and to see how the volume and the unique volume and you know, schedule of last year will affect how teams handle guys and how guys, especially young players, respond. We don't know what will be available for teams from top to bottom necessarily in terms of minor leagues. From a scheduling standpoint last year and what that means for this year, what are you intrigued by? What kind of things do you look at as you're evaluating, for instance, breakout candidates?
Yeah, well, actually, what I'm working on right now is trying to figure out how each team is going to piece together, nearly three times as many innings as they had to throw last year. But you're right. When you look at breakout candidates, you're sort of looking as best you can at underlying skills. You know, if someone added 50 points or dropped 50 points of batting average from 19 to 20, it doesn't mean that much to me because we can all know over a small sample, like, fluky things can happen. But, you know, if you added three or four ticks to your fastball, or you started hitting the ball 3 or 4 miles an hour harder, that's the stuff that's meaningful pretty quickly, right? Like, even one batted ball at a very high exit velocity, like, let's say, you know, 110, right? That's something that some guys just don't have the skill to do. Billy Hamilton could play for 100 years and never do that once. And if there's a new guy coming up who does it, that immediately tells me something. That, like, that puts him on my radar. Doesn't mean he can field. It doesn't mean he can make contact, none of that. But it tells me he's got that hard hit skill. So, you know, it's these underlying things that are meaningful quickly that, you know, that helps me a little more than just saying, okay, what did he hit last year?
Are teams more willing in your eyes, Mike, to move a guy along and potentially utilize one strength rather than, and this is perhaps almost entirely anecdotal, but rather than the cliche of, well, he needs to be more well-rounded at the big league level? Are we seeing teams say, well, if a player can do this one thing really, really, really well, that can be an asset right away, and then we'll figure the other stuff out?
I think there's a little bit of truth to that. I mean, everything in baseball is trending towards the extreme, you know, who throws the hardest, who hits the hardest, who can strike out the most guys, all that. I remember a couple of years ago, if you remember Adam Jones, who played for Baltimore for a long time, sure. And he was sort of post peak. He wasn't an all-star anymore. He was kind of like a veteran third outfielder kind of guy. And I saw someone describe him as the problem he had, like, he wasn't getting great contract offers, was that he was good at a lot of things, but he wasn't really great at anything. You know, and that was almost seen as a detriment, because it's like, if you're average, if you're decent at everything, that's fine. You're not hurting the team. But, like, what are you doing to succeed? Even just this morning.
And he was an expensive average player comparatively to young guys, right?
Exactly right. I mean, even this morning, I was reading an article in The Athletic about Liam Hendricks, who, you know, kind of has had a very weird career path. He got DFA'd by the A's a couple times just like 3 years ago. And the way he described himself, I thought it was hilarious. He's like, you know, when I was a starter, I was the generic right-handed pitcher from MLB The Show. That's what I was. I didn't have anything special. And obviously he's improved himself and he's changed, but now he's, if not the best reliever in baseball, he's up there. So you're right. You've got to have that carrying tool now. It can't just be like, I'm competent at everything, because if you're not great at anything, somebody else is.
Visiting with Mike Petriello of MLB.com. Yeah, and with that being said, with teams, you know, obviously needing to, I guess, not even watch payroll, but teams still trying to figure out what payroll is, and with some uncertainty around the minor leagues, you know, there are young players in every organization that perhaps a handful of years ago or under different circumstances would be handled a bit differently, but maybe we'll see teams willing to give younger players a shot, and maybe not the sink or swim, but say, all right, if you do this one thing really, really well, you can help us now. You can develop at this level rather than being at an alternate training site against, you know, live BP essentially every day, and you'll be pretty cheap.
Well, I think that's true, but I also,
even if we're starting the clock.
Yeah. No, that's true for sure. But I also don't think that's necessarily new for this year or even related to the pandemic. You know, baseball has been trending younger for a number of years, you know, and they just look around the league right now, right? Acuña and Soto and Fernando.
Yeah, you wrote about those guys too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And there's a bunch of different reasons for that. I think the number one reason, first and foremost, is that, you know, we have in the sport right now, I think the most talented players we've ever had. You know, like nobody shows up at spring training playing their way into shape anymore. These guys are in shape all year round. They are incredible athletes. They use technology to help themselves get better. And you can see in the numbers, right? Like a higher percentage of plate appearances and innings, wins above replacement come from the younger guys than the older guys. Now, if you want to point out the younger guys don't make as much, I'm not so naive as to pretend that's not a factor, right? But also they come up, they're successful right away. Like, I think it's really where the sport is trending. The older guy, the 35-year-old who, you know, maybe in years past might have gotten a 2 or 3 year deal, unless you're like a super duper star. And even if then, those guys have a lot tougher time now. It's hard to compete with how good and how immediately ready the 21-year-olds, the 22-year-olds are.
Well, and to come back to the players and Major League Baseball relationship, that will lead to the trending younger of guys reaching free agency, right? And the superstars reaching free agency.
Trending younger in the sense that if they're up at 21 and they get there at 26, yes, it's difficult to know like what the changes might be. You know, do you get to free agency sooner? Do you get to arbitration sooner? I think,
or maybe they're just not willing to take the traditional pre-arb deals or the arb buyout deals that the Cardinals, for instance. That's how they've operated for a really long time with their young players.
Yeah, I agree. And I think part of this is going to upend the whole salary structure, or at least it should. Like Juan Soto, who in my opinion is going to be a Hall of Famer, he's making, I don't even know, like 700 grand or something like that this year, which is like wild when you have guys who are making 25 million, you know, aren't going to be as productive as him. And I think that was maybe fine for a while, but now that you see these young guys are coming up and they're great right away, I think that is like the easiest thing. I don't want to say easy because it's not my money, right? But like that's the first focal point I would say is, hey, let's pay the young guys a little sooner, and then you have positive impacts of that down the line.
How do you think that competition affects the handling of those young players, Mike, especially in this year? Because we've seen, you know, I guess in the National League, like a group of teams that are really aggressively, I think, trying to win. And, you know, it started in the offseason with the Padres and the Dodgers. Cardinals got in the mix. I don't think we've spoken since the Nolan Arenado acquisition, but there are other teams that are cutting payroll and trying to figure out kind of how they move forward and what they have from a resource standpoint to move forward. Does that affect the way you think teams handle internally guys within their organization?
Well, I think it has to. I mean, I think, you know, if you're thinking to yourself, man, I'm really close, you know, if I have, not that anybody has the next Tatis, right? But let's say you did, and that might push me over. Like, yeah, I want him right away. On the other hand, if I'm going to lose 105 games this year, you know, maybe I'm better served giving him some time. I mean, look what the Royals just did, right? They're not going to be a bad team. I don't think they're going to be a great team either, but they decided not to have Bobby Witt on their opening day roster. And I'm sure some people are saying, you know, that's specifically because of his service time, because that's obviously been a big topic. And that's definitely happened in the past. I don't think that's true here because he's 20 and he's got like 30 games in rookie ball. That's kind of it. And they have a shortstop they like very much. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it does kind of go back to the competitive landscape. And I think there are ways that you could probably improve that. I think people don't quite understand that now more than any time in baseball history, the relationship between like how much of your income comes off of attendance and how much that's related to winning is lesser. Like years and years ago, if you didn't win, you didn't draw and you couldn't afford your team, you know? And now it's like, well, everybody's got tons of TV money, which is great. Like the game is very healthy in a lot of ways economically. But we need to make it a little more, depending on how you want to look at it, appealing to go for it and win, or perhaps more painful to do the opposite.
Yeah, I wonder how this year, what the, you know, cost benefit analysis of winning and competing this year will impact how teams operate at the trade deadline. Because, you know, the Padres, for instance, moving and they're kind of an aberration because of the farm system that they built up. But, you know, their moves over the offseason, I wonder if anyone will be the team to kind of push all in at the deadline and try to buy low on some players that can make an impact because they value, you know, winning and the chance and maybe what they see their path to winning this year and maybe less resistance this year compared to other years and what that can do moving forward for them.
Yeah, it's such a huge unknown because so much of it just really depends on the state of the country and the virus. You know, do you have in a lot of places 80% or 100% fans in the seats in July? I mean, if you do, that's like a nice impact for your bottom line. If you don't, I think that'll impact it in different ways. So fingers crossed on that, obviously, not just for baseball, but for America and for the world. But it's so hard to know what that looks like until we know what everything else looks like.
Mike, I mentioned the Cardinals and Nolan Arenado. We haven't had a chance to chat on the show since that move. And now as we are, you know, deep into March, how do you see just big picture the Cardinals and just from an improvement standpoint, obviously that piece, what that does on paper for them heading into the year in the National League Central?
I don't want to disrespect Austin Gomber, who I think is a pretty decent pitcher, but I still cannot believe the Rockies paid the Cardinals to take Nolan Arenado and didn't get, you know, one of their top 5-10 prospects or whatever. Like that is that's a deal that's going to go down, I think, infamously in Denver in history. And there's a huge takedown to the Rockies in the Athletic today that Ken Rosenthal wrote, which sort of details their issues. That's a problem for Colorado, and it's a great big advantage for the Cardinals, obviously, because you go get Nolan Arenado. My thing is, yes, that deal was amazing. He improves the team. There's no question that whatsoever. I do think that there's a little bit of the division didn't do much this winter, which is true. And the Cardinals made that big splash, which is also true. So that makes them the favorites. I'm not sure it does. Like they're better, but I've still got a lot of concerns about the lineup, and I've got a lot of concerns about the depth of the rotation, especially because there's been some injuries already. Like sitting here today, there's not one great team in this division. I will probably pick the Brewers by like a hair over the Cardinals just because I really like Milwaukee's top end pitching. But I do think that there's so much variance in what the Cardinals could be, especially in the outfield. Like it's not hard for me to sit here and say, okay, in 3 months, this Cardinals outfield is great. Like Bader's catching everything and Carlson looks like he's going to be a star and O'Neill makes more contact. It's also not that hard for me to say nobody's hitting at all. And they've got a 35% strikeout rate because they've got all these young unproven guys. You know, I have said all along, I wish they'd gotten like one good veteran out, like Jock Peterson or somebody like that. They didn't. They're going to run with the young guys, which I guess is better than not giving them the chance. But, you know, there's so much variance. The only two hitters in the lineup that I can reasonably say I'm certain will be above average are Goldschmidt and Arenado. And that's a little bit worrisome to me.
Mike Petriello, MLB.com. Follow on Twitter at @Mike_Petriello. Hey, appreciate it, man. And yeah, what a change from March 22nd of 2020. Here's to everything moving forward. Stay safe, and we'll talk soon. Thanks so much, man.
Here's the better things, my friend. Thanks, Chris.